Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Sheldon Meidinger from Bismarck, North Dakota, back on the show. Sheldon is a great friend of the JMO crew here, and any opportunity we get to talk fishing with Sheldon, I definitely do it on and off the water. Sheldon is just a fun guy to be in touch with all the time, and he fishes the Casino Walleye Cup Circuit, I believe that's what it's called, and we've promoted the Casino Cup Walleye Circuit plenty of times on this podcast. It's out here in the Dakotas. The regular season events happen on Devil's Lake and Sakakawea out of Newtown, and then down on Lake Oahe out of Mobridge, and then they have a championship at one of those locations. It switches up every year, but it's really a fun and very competitive tournament field, and definitely heard a lot of great things about how that tournament circuit is run and everything. Is very competitive, like I said. And Sheldon, he's been around the industry for a very long time, really, but he's fishing as well as he ever has. You look back, he's been doing this for decades, but back in 2023, this very competitive tournament circuit, Sheldon and his teammates, Bobby Crow, who's kind of a legendary angler in the industry. Bobby's been also fishing high-level, top-level walleye tournaments for a really, really long time. And then another teammate with Bobby and Sheldon, Hunter Hervala here, a younger guy from Bismarck who's coming up doing a lot of fishing. And those three guys, they won Team of the Year in 2023 in the Casino Walleye Cup tournament, in the Casino Walleye Cup circuit. Definitely very competitive. And Sheldon, he's fishing as well as he ever has. But we talk a little bit about that. We talk about the evolution, a little bit of his career, and just, kind of the way things are now. He's fishing very, very well, doing a lot of things that he's always done, but there's a lot of new things to learn to stay competitive in this, this day and age. And we talk about that. We talk about, continuing to gain confidence in the new things and having that tournament mentality of finding and catching big fish, is a big part of this conversation with Sheldon, and just kind of getting a status update, not just from the fishing, but also personally for him and things that he's doing and working on to stay competitive as he is. And fun conversations there. But then we definitely get into the topic that I get so many write-ins about, so many requests, and it's just one of my favorite topics, is Lake Sakakawea. The opportunities to fish this time of year, or if we're forecasting for the fall bite, fall fishing is just great in so many places, and we got to start talking about it. It's that time of year, but no better to start off our fall fishing conversations than a conversation about Lake Sakakawea with Sheldon Meidinger. He's been around here he's got so many years of experience up there. He fishes tournaments late into the fall, and we talk a little bit about that. So fall bite on Sakakawea is a big part of this conversation as well. And a big update from Sheldon Meidinger, one of our good buddies. So let's get into it. Sheldon Meidinger, fall walleyes. Let's do it. Zooloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zooloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zooloft Construction at their website, zooloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. I want to take a minute to address a list of very important topics this time of year, especially here in the state of North Dakota, where hunting seasons are already underway. Number one, we need to be respectful of each other when we encounter other hunters in the field, whether you're recreating on private or public land. If you're interacting with a landowner or just other hunters in the field, we have to be able to interact respectfully and be cool with each other. Leave gates as you find them every time you go through, regardless, again, on private or public land. Check if land is posted physically or electronically. When we're parking our decoy trailers or small boat trailer on public roadways, we have to keep the roadway clear so other vehicles or farm equipment can pass through. Be respectful of that. And picking up our trash has to be a major priority. Now, accidents happen when we get back to the truck and we're in a hurry and it's after dark, something falls out your door, but let's cut down on the accidents, let's cut down on the excuses,
check around your vehicle once, twice, or three times before you leave every single time, and we can cut down on the trash that is left out on the landscape. That's always a big one every year. If we can do these things, then we're doing our part to hunt for tomorrow. And of course, I want to wish everybody a safe and successful season. For updates on hunting seasons, hunting regulations, seasonal updates, head to the North Dakota Game and Fish website. That link is in the description of this podcast.
Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. You might have to rack your brain a little bit. It's been long enough on the podcast that even if you reach back into last year for some of these memories, for some of this update, we might need a little bit of all of it because, it's been so long, man. So what's the update? Thinking back, what are some of the notables? What kind of fishing you been doing the last couple seasons? What's it been like? What have been the fun takeaways? Just give me the full update here.
You know, we've just been basically chasing that Casino Cup circuit around and spending most of our time.
You and Bobby, yeah, right?
Bobby, Hunter, and myself.
Yeah.
So it's been us three. We've been chasing Sakakawea, Devil's Lake, Mobridge, and then...
Is it the same? It's the same locations every year, but do they switch that up? I don't pay close enough attention, I guess.
Same locations, but they move the championship each year. So
okay.
Last year, the championship was at Newtown. This year, it was in Mulbridge. Next year, it'll be in Devil's Lake.
Gotcha. Okay, so the regular season stays relatively the same.
Yep.
Yeah, okay. That's interesting, right? Because like every tournament circuit does their own deal or, you know, whatever. Or, you know, there's plenty of places that – or plenty of tournament tours and circuits or whatever that visit the same places every year, but maybe they switch up the time of year, maybe they switch up the dates or whatever it is. But that one's interesting. You keep your regular season fairly similar. Do you feel like is there any sort of vibe around that? Does it make it a little bit more competitive just because every year can potentially be similar and everybody gets really super dialed in? Like tell me about that circuit and what you like about it.
Yeah, basically, I mean, it's kind of nice going at the same time. So, you know, everybody that gets there has a relative good idea what the bite's going to be. But this year, it changed. I mean, it seemed like all the bodies of water this year, we fished different than years prior to. Not only the fish being in different places and different patterns, but, forward-facing sonar. There's so many different things this year that came into play that it's like we went to a new body of water each year when, like we said earlier, We go there at the same time, so we automatically throw the stuff that we know we're going to use in the boat, and here we go. But this year, no, we had to fill the boat up a little bit more with more tackle and different ways to fish. So this year was a little different year. So it was another learning experience for us.
Yeah, that's actually a really phenomenal point. Like, I feel like we could have a whole discussion that would revolve around what you just said, like in tournament fishing. Tell me a little bit about that, like preparing for tournaments nowadays, the conversations that you and your team are having, and just how different that is from, say, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I tell you what, last year, we knew forward-facing sonar was going to be a game changer. We dabbled in it. You know, we used it a little bit, weren't familiar with it much, and weren't confident, you know, so we would fall back on our ways of doing things that we were comfortable with. And basically, we got lucky last year and we pulled off the team of the year for the casino up there. And then this year started and we had a decent start. We were happy with that. But after that, the forward facing sonar took off. I mean, I bet you top 10 teams that cashed a check in each one of those tournaments was using forward-facing sonar. So we knew it was going to be something, but it really turned out to be something. So, you know, we basically had to put our nose to the grind and learn how to use it. I mean, this last tournament, I mean, we were slow again this year, but this is the first tournament we really used forward facing sonar down in Mobridge. I just went out when I was pre-fishing. I didn't take anything, but that's all I did. Six rods, six different jigs, and just started using it. And, you know, caught some fish, caught some bigger fish, got in the right areas. I ended up going back to work, and that's what Hunter and Bob did, the same thing. They went out and just ground on it and finally got some confidence with it, and it paid off for us, you know, at the last tournament. You know, it's a confidence deal. And I mean, you need to put your time in, you need to do it pre-fishing. You need to just go fun fish and use it and learn what the fish look like on the graph. And I always sat back when listening to Hoyer and all those guys and Dewey. Well, I could tell that was a 2-pounder, didn't cast at that. Right. Oh, there's some 6-pounders. We went for those. And you could tell that was even bigger over there. It's just in my mind, I'm like, oh my goodness, just listening to him at the championship up in Devil's Lake that year. And now I can understand what they were looking at. So it's something. I mean, one of my buddies goes, if you're not scoping, you're hoping. So
yeah,
you gotta go with the times.
Yeah, there's definitely been some, you know, from a tournament perspective, that's where I feel like it's really an entertaining conversation, you know, talking about forward sonar. Now, like, because I'm always in fun fishing mode. I just feel like, I don't know, I just don't have the brain of a tournament angler, no matter how hard I try. I'm just, you know, everything that I do is all just a mirror image of what I think other people are doing. I don't have a genuine, you know, like, I don't have an original tournament thought in my head. I'm just not built that way. But you guys have been doing it forever. That's where I feel like I like pressing those buttons, because I learn a lot. But like, that's, you know, like you said, going fun fishing, you got to go out tournament fishing, you got to test your mettle, you got to put your time in. But I'm curious, like, what do you feel like is the toughest part about building confidence in it? Again, from a tournament perspective, like, you know, because it's tournament fishing is so much more than just a fish catch. You know, there's all the time management, all the fish finding, you know, just the whole, you know, the whole big picture of it. For you, what seems to be the toughest part about building confidence in utilizing forward sonar exclusively on tournament day?
The one thing that for me is when you're going over these fish, you know, if you're not 100%, like, most of the guys can tell if that's a walleye. Most of the guys can tell if it's a carp or whatever. They can distinguish by what it looks like on the screen, what fish it is. And we're still learning that. I mean, I can tell a paddlefish, I can tell a northern, I can see that, you know, but, you know, is that a catfish? Is that a walleye? You know, and then spending time on them. And these guys are moving right over the fish. They're picking, just, they're going over 5 or 6 fish, casting at them. And they could be 10 fish there and they catch 1 or 2 of them, but they're just constantly moving. And you, and I get too nervous. I just like, and I got to catch fish to know that those are what they are. And then I'm on the right thing. They have so much confidence in it. They can just keep moving, cast at a fish here, cast at a fish there, catch their 6 and go in. And, it's hard for me, and hopefully we get a little better at it. And, we can get to that point. I know it takes a long time to get to that point. So we're going to do our part and work hard at it and get some confidence and hopefully use it and be successful.
Yeah, but I mean, you got so many years of just like rich experience, you know, like you've rubbed shoulders with all the best guys. You've been around, you and Bobby, you know, just what a cool team. I mean, you guys have, you know, individually, you have a ton of cool experience, you know, just in your careers. You bring a lot to the table. You know, when you're trying to build confidence in these things, I still feel like you're just so much more advanced than like somebody that's trying to learn every other element of fishing as well as forward sonar. But that being so, you're probably more, I guess what I'm getting at is you're probably a lot more tougher on yourself, you know, than I feel like if I got in the boat with you, it'd probably still be really impressive, how you find fish or whatever, because there's all the other instincts are there. But I guess, yeah, you know, maybe talking about the bite might be kind of fun and educational. Talk about some of the bites this year. You talked about sort of the progression of this season. I mean, you guys came in team of the year going into this season. And so you had a momentum, you had confidence, and you said you had a decent finish the first tournament, but as those tournaments
you know, as the as it progressed, the season progressed, and the, those forward sonar guys were top 10-ing everything. What were those bites like? I mean, what was it? What were those bites like? And why do you feel like it was suitable for those guys versus, say, creek chubbers or, you know, crankers? You know, just like historic Missouri River reservoir bites. You know, the top 10 can a lot of times have three or four different prominent patterns and techniques, you know, represented in the top 10. Why do you feel like it got really top heavy with forward sonar? Just talking about the bites.
Yeah. So went down to Morbridge. We were fine. We cut our fish trolling down there. So we got away with not having to use our forward facing sonar down there. So it was really windy. We got our two big overs and at another spot we could catch some unders. So we finished well there. Then we went up to Devil's Lake and the bite was decent, you know, and we went up there, you know, we're going to be past casting cranks and jigs and up shallow like we always do. Had a decent bite and came tournament day. She went dead calm and our bite went dead calm. I'm thinking, oh boy, we only have four fish. We came in two fish short. This is not going to be good. You know, we needed a good finish in each tournament, just like we did the year before. And we came in short. The big bags came in and those guys were forward facing sonar. I mean, they had them figured out. They were finding a fish to catch the fish and we basically missed that one. So we knew we were in trouble.
Did it feel like though it was one pattern, it was one area, one pattern, or did it seem like forward sonar was just sort of the missing link in multiple different bites or patterns? I feel like, you know, I mean, I know not everything gets spoken about after weigh-ins, but did you get the vibe that the forward sonar guys were all doing the exact same thing? Or because I feel like that would maybe dump, you know, water it down, that maybe we're putting too much into it if they all have just found one bite. But if it's the missing link in, say, guys were catching them deep with it, guys were catching them suspended with it, and then guys were catching them in the trees with it, and all different techniques like slip bobber and or, you know, pitching jigs or whatever. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, I think it was a missing link. I mean, because there was fish caught in all different areas of the lake. I mean, they caught them on East End. They caught them out on Pelican. I mean, you know what? They would actually just focus on fish instead of focusing on spots where we know those fish should be.
Yeah.
And that's what we did because we like to fish the weeds up there. We do that. So we just went and did what we've done in the past. And then these guys actually went out and fished different areas and had them figured out. And it could have been a depth thing, but, you know, they found them on the live scope. They pitched to them and they caught them.
Yep.
And we missed that. And we know better for next time. So hopefully we can figure that out. And then we went up to Sakakawea. Bobby, Hunter, myself, we all fished the NWT tournament. We all planned on that. And, you know, every year we always know that if you're not on Shell Village, you're going to be in trouble. So we focused on that area and didn't use a lot of forward facing sonar again, using a lot of chubs and just working those areas that we knew we could catch big fish. Well, that tournament was won down on the East End over deep pods of smelt. We didn't need to run that far up to Shell because, you know, that's what we thought we should do.
Yeah, but man, so, as well as anybody on the planet, how many top tens, like how much money has been won off of Shell Village on Lake Sakakawea in walleye tournaments? Like Jason and I were talking about it, that there's like an acre, maybe like an acre and a half on that piece of structure that is like one of the most valuable pieces of structure for walleye anglers that have ever experienced it. You know, so I mean, how do you get away from that? I mean, mentally, it's crazy.
Yeah, especially we had a good pre-fish there, you know, so we were confident. We said, yeah, well, this will be good. You know, but, you know, making that long run from 60 miles one way and filling fuel and going back when you could have focused on those fish too. You know, everybody thinks, the fish are a little lighter on the East End. Well, the shallow fish might be, but those deep fish sure weren't. And there were some really good fish out there that were being caught. And they got to spend more time fishing, looking, and catching the ones they wanted.
I mean, and that one too, you know, I talked to some of those guys after, like I talked to Dylan and Dewey after that. But, you know, one thing that I forgot to pay attention to
was anybody in the top 10 trolling cranks?
Not that I don't even think I've seen anybody trolling.
Because it seemed like the fish that like Dewey was catching, or anybody that was fishing out on the main lake, it seemed like those fish were set up to where you could have trolled through them and covered water and had an, you know, tried to have enough bites by the end of the day. But maybe it just wasn't that kind of bite. But if you, it seemed from the sounds of it, the way those guys talked about, you know, just how many fish they were seeing in certain areas, like somebody could have landed on them pulling cranks. I was just really surprised that that didn't happen. I feel like that'll still have its day. I feel like, again, you know, like you guys pulling cranks down on Oahu for that Mobridge tournament when you started off the season this year, I don't think that stories like that are done and over. I think that people can still be dialed, you know, guys can still be dialed into that if you're in the right areas. Like, I feel like pulling cranks on these western reservoirs are still going to have their day. You can still make money in these tournaments if you really get that stuff dialed in too. I don't know. It's like, it's not a dead conversation, that's for sure.
No, absolutely not. You know, and I had those rods in the boat when we were in Mobridge. I mean, talking with Bob and Hunter, I said, you know, if it gets really rough and we get to the point where we can't, you know, pitch to where we want to be, I said, we need to have the cranking rods and everything ready to go just in case we needed them. And we all agreed on that. And it never did get that rough. So we kept going and we're lucky enough to get the fish we got to finish down there in the championship. But back to Sakakawea, yeah, there were you were talking to Dylan. I mean, he actually made the run too out west, way out west too. I think he was done by 9:30 on day one or day two.
Yeah, I think it was day two, but I think he was surprised about that. Like, I don't think he was planning on that actually happening. I mean, he's a heck of a stick, you know. So I mean, you wouldn't want to put it past him. If you put them fish in front of him, like his plan is to catch them. But from the sounds of it, like, yeah, none of those guys that were in early had that kind of bite and pre-fish that they thought they were going to be in.
Yeah, early. Exactly. And then surprisingly enough, that was a really good shallow bite up there. That, you know, when we were up there for the NWT and the Casino Cup, because the Casino NWT was Thursday, Friday, and then we left Garrison to go to Newtown right from there and to fish Saturday for the Newtown Casino Cup. So we ended up fishing a lot of the same spots in our team with the same results, which weren't good. So it was a really big learning experience for us. We all drove home knowing, yep, now it's over. Now if we don't have forward facing sonar, we're not going to be able to compete. I mean, it's like having a race car with no steering wheel. So
yeah,
it's time to get going and try and catch up. And I mean, catch up. We're way behind because you've seen how many good anglers are out there using it right now.
Zuloft Construction from Fargo, North Dakota is your trusted partner when it comes to protecting and enhancing your property, servicing the surrounding area with over 40 years of combined experience. They've built a reputation for delivering exceptional roofing, siding, gutter, and window solutions. With a team of skilled professionals using quality brands and products, that's how they ensure lasting results. To sum it up, Zuloft Construction is committed to exceeding customer expectations. If you want an appointment for a free estimate, check out Zuloft Construction at their website, zuloftconstruction.com, or call them at 701-630-0197. All those contacts are in the description of this podcast. I want to take a minute to address a list of very important topics this time of year, especially here in the state of North Dakota, where hunting seasons are already underway. Number one, we need to be respectful of each other when we encounter other hunters in the field, whether you're recreating on private or public land, if you're interacting with a landowner or just other hunters in the field, we have to be able to interact respectfully and be cool with each other. Leave gates as you find them every time you go through, regardless, again, on private or public land. Check if land is posted physically or electronically. When we're parking our decoy trailers or small boat trailer on public roadways, we have to keep the roadway clear so other vehicles or farm equipment can pass through. Be respectful of that. And picking up our trash has to be a major priority. Now, accidents happen when we get back to the truck and we're in a hurry and it's after dark. Something falls out your door. But let's cut down on the accidents. Let's cut down on the excuses. check around your vehicle once, twice, or three times before you leave every single time, and we can cut down on the trash that is left out on the landscape. That's always a big one every year. If we can do these things, then we're doing our part to hunt for tomorrow. And of course, I want to wish everybody a safe and successful season. For updates on hunting seasons, hunting regulations, seasonal updates, head to the North Dakota Game and Fish website. That link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Yeah, I feel like the learning curve is steep, though, for sure. And again, I feel like when you bring a lot of just fishing experience to the table and just tournaments, right? Like, you're going to get a feel for if you're on the right track or not. And that's something that those of us amateurs don't have. Like, when I'm learning forward sonar myself, I'm like, no matter how much, like, I just don't have enough tournament experience to even know if I'm really making steps forward. Like, I get one or two fish catches that are really cool to me. I guess at the end of the day, I have to just chalk it up to fun fishing, because I don't even know what so much of it means. I feel like when you bring that tournament experience to the table, you're going to be able to steepen that learning curve where you don't, you know, going into next year, I don't know. I feel like you talk about being way behind or whatever. I feel like you're your own worst critic in that sense. You know, as long as you guys are open-minded, you know, as a team, your conversations, you're open-minded about, you know, maybe some sacrifices you have to make, you know, just from a fishing standpoint, or maybe to some of your old confidence, you know, you might have to, you know, whatever. Definitely, like you say, leave all the other rods at home and leave all the other tackle at home when you're out there forcing yourself to do it. But yeah, I think you guys are still in it. You got a lot of years left, so saddle up. I think it'd be good. And I know, let's see. So that season, you guys just recently fished that championship. That was in Mobridge.
Yep, we were down in Mobridge last weekend. Yep.
Yeah. So that was just recent. So that season wrapped up. And do you have any other tournaments planned for this year?
Yep, we are going to be. We have the Fall Big Muddy here on the Missouri River. I think we're going out of Fort Rice on the 21st, and then we're heading up to Williston for the Big Ten. We're going to go visit Jeff up there. And that's a tournament we always look forward to going to. It's opening weekend of Pheasant, but you know what? I'll sacrifice that so we can go up and fish out of the Lewis and Clark Park up there.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the boundaries for that tournament?
It'll be the mouth of the river going up into Williston and to the bridge by Newtown. So we got that whole stretch of water there, which is a lot of water. And, you know, I'm really excited too, because I think a lot of those fish stayed up in that river this summer. Even in the NWT and the Casino Cup, there was a lot of nice fish caught out of the river.
Yeah.
So we're hoping to go up there and catch some nice fish and get a good basket and take our forward facing sonar and roll.
Yeah. You still got some great opportunities, you know, talking about yourself and testing your mettle and learning new things, man. You still got some great fishing let to do this year. So
yeah, absolutely. We pulled into Mobridge last week. We were sitting 21st. I said, you guys, we got to do a little better. I mean, we won it last year. We at least need a top 10. So as we worked hard, ended up getting it. We had a good basket. We were in fourth on day one. Day two got a little weird on us. We got one fish at 1 o'clock. Lucky enough, it was a 13.09. So got a big fish. I was in the back of the boat. Hunter and Bob are up front, and they're scoping. We're looking through the trees. Hunter turned to the left, and he said, it just looked like a big light bulb. So Bob pitched to it. Fish came up, hit it. I'm thinking, oh, big catfish. This seemed like it might be a catfish or a snag, even said. Yeah, 13.09 came in, put it on the bottom of the boat. And that one came out of 50 feet of water. So got that fish in, got it fizzed, got it on ice. And I was really surprised how good those big fish lasted to bring them in. We couldn't weigh any dead fish, so we had to keep every fish alive. And when you're fishing deep like that, that's an important part. And for us, so we didn't want to lose a 13-pound fish. So we babysat, kept it nice, and got it back to the weigh-ins and still lively. I mean, I'm pretty sure we could have let that fish go, but got the weight for it, and it was good. So we had a good time and ended up fourth and ninth for team of the year. So I was really happy with that.
Oh, yeah. And that's a way tournament, man. Like I feel like I've had every conversation I've had with, you know, the Montana Gov Cup guys, or, you know, the AIM conversations that I've had recently. Like there's so many, you know, catch, photo, release tournaments out there. And, not that that comes with any kind of an asterisk or anything like that, but it definitely gives context, right? It's like when people are listening, you'd start talking about 12, 13, 14 pounder fish or whatever, you know, you got to realize it's a conversion chart. Not you guys. You're saying you weighed a fish over 13 pounds. That was on the scale.
That was on the scale. Yep. So legit 1309. It was exciting.
I know Bobby, he's out on that Columbia River, so he probably seen some 13 pounders, but
yeah, he wasn't as excited as we were. You know, he's used to seeing 16, 17s, you know, and yeah, he goes, that's a good one.
Yeah. Oh dude. Oh man. I'd have crawled in that live well with that fish and just bear hugged it and just babied it. Like you said, back to the boat landing, dude, that's a special fish, dude. That's wild. That's crazy. But yeah. Very cool. That's a cool experience. But, you know, if we were going to just spend a little bit of time talking about a cool bite, like I said, Sakakawea is just such a popular write-in for me. I can never have enough good conversations about Sakakawea. So what can we do? What can we talk about Sakakawea for the fall? I mean, you break the lake down a little bit. That's one thing that I probably don't paint the picture enough of when I have these seasonal conversations about Sakakawea is how, just how the different parts of the lake can be totally different given, you know, throughout the time of year. You got the west end, the river, you got, Shell Village and Van Hook in the summertime. The east end is its own deal. I guess maybe sort of like a storytelling or a big picture conversation about fall on Sakakawea, maybe any type of experience that you have with it, or anything that you're forecasting for the Big Ten tournament, or just anything fall Sakakawea related. What are you comfortable with? What can you give me?
Oh, I'm just looking forward to getting up on Shell Village, 8-pound, the east slides, west slides, you know, the crosses. Those are my favorite places to fish, you know. And, you know, if it's not on a creek chub, it's going to be in a jig and wrap. This year, We're gonna focus using that forward facing sonar up there, but we're gonna hit all those same areas where we know those big fish are gonna be coming to, and we're gonna try and go out and catch some nice fish like we do in the fall up there. Like you said, Sakakawea it's awesome. The facilities, I mean, up at Van Hook, your boat ramps, cleaning stations, everything is just it's a great place to be, and good places to put in and stuff. So I look forward to going up in there and hanging out, going out of Newtown, fishing Bear's Den and all that stuff, the grade bins and stuff all the way down the river from there. That is a fisherman's dream area right there. I mean, in the fall, you can do whatever you want. You can catch the fish you want and you catch quality fish too. So I look forward to falls up there. So that is for sure.
When do you feel like that fall bite really turned like really becomes a thing? Or like, how would you describe the fall bite? Is it a water temperature deal? Is it, does the fish activity change completely? Like,
yeah, you know, it's always, you know, when you got to throw a sweatshirt on or a jacket, you know, it's time to go up to Van Hook. It's always that time. Shell Village is going to be going. The water temperatures are dropping. Fish are moving, you know, and you just hop up there and it's fun when you go back and you get to do the same thing over and over because it's just you're back to home and doing what you like to do and catching the way you want to catch them. You know, you got several different spots to go to. So you got all your creek chubs left over from the season and you know what you're going to do and where you're going to go use them at. So like I said, I mean, and there's so many different areas up there and you can, and there's other ways to catch them too. So, and we'll focus on that a little bit more too. I mean, we'll try some jigs with some crawlers. We'll try with, like I said, jigging wraps and chubs and whatever we can do. We're going to go up and we're going to try and catch those fish, but it's just, it's relaxing to get up in there when you got a good weather day, and it seems the fishing gets better. I mean, as long as you can get on the lake, those fish are going to be biting up there. So as long as you're not freezing up and it's getting too cold, you have spots to go fish and catch big fish.
I like the way you say that, man. Like, if you got to put a sweatshirt on, if you got to put a light jacket on to fish all day, that's when you want to start prioritizing it, dude. But you know, why is it? Like, why do we have to reiterate these conversations every year? Because no one, it seems like fall fishing is like the best non-kept secret that no one wants to do, man. It's like hunting season, kids are back to school. Is it just like something that people can't physically do? Why is it we could promote great fishing in the fall anywhere across the country, like anywhere walleyes live, we can talk fall fishing, but boat ramps are still always going to be empty. Isn't it just fascinating?
It is. And you'll see a lot of that. You'll see, I like to focus on areas that we can go up to and fish in the morning. And then I got the two dogs, Rip and Molly, got my labs, and then take the shotgun with and try and find some birds in the afternoon. I mean, there's nothing better than that. A little cast and blast and just getting out, and the dogs are in the boat when it's cool out and it's not 100 degrees in the summer when it's uncomfortable for them. So it's you got your best friends with you, and you're able to go out and do a couple things, you know, fish and hunt birds in the fall. That's what I look forward to.
Yeah, it's like the land of opportunity out here for sure. Yep. But, you know, back to the fishing, like when you're breaking down areas and you're talking about all those just like capital, like all those, you know, just the name spots on Sakakawea in that middle section, you're talking about shells, talking about the slides and Bear's Den and going up towards Newtown. You know, I've had those conversations in the past before, but I find it interesting, you know, everybody's different perspective. But for you, like, you know, those fish patterns, but like when you're breaking down areas with the techniques that you're using, what are some of the things that you're looking for? I mean, what are those good spots sort of look like to you, or just sort of the spots on the spots? Are you looking for schooling fish? Are the fish spread out enough that you're trying to cover water? Like, what's your mentality when you're fall fishing on Sakakawea in that part of the lake, and I guess even more specifically when you are on the hunt, like, you know, in hindsight, looking from your successes in the past, like what do the really good spots on a really good day set up like?
If all those spots that I talked about are a steep break off the channel where they can come up shallow, you'll get those fish moving up and down. Looking for bait, absolutely looking for bait, because that's what they're doing. Those fish are constantly looking for something to do. Their next deal, their next thing is their next meal. And, you know, you're looking on the graph, looking at your tight contour lines and off the river channel. That is what you look for. And once you find those areas, you just start searching for your fish. You find your bait, find your marks, and fish the fish. So basically I'm always looking for a steep break where it comes up to a shallower area. So, and most of that's right on the river, on the channel, coming right out of the river all the way over to the slides and then down to the west slides and across. I mean, you can follow that river channel and that's where you're going to find your fish.
That's such a good information right there. That's like, if somebody, if finding spots to start off is like the most intimidating part, you know, just take that little bit of information right there. I can look at the map and find four or five, maybe more good starting spots and get out there. And, you know, nothing's a community spot. You don't have to worry about this time of year getting somewhere and there being 30 boats in the spot, because it's just not like that this time of year, right? I mean, it's like, no. Literally it's like, you feel like you just feel like you're just like a pioneer man when you're out there, because like a really busy spot might be five boats on a 2 mile stretch. It's like,
yep,
it's unbelievable. Yep. Now, one other great point that you make that I think is so fun about these fall conversations is like, and this is true on so many other bodies of water, is that it really opens up these fish. They get a little bit more friendly. Part of that could be that the fishing pressure has relaxed them a little bit for the last few weeks or whatever it is, but, and they're also hungry, you know? So it's like, it's such a great, perfect storm, right? That's really the essence of these fall fishing conversations. But
you know, the one great point is like you can kind of pick your poison. You can decide how you want to fish these fish. There's just a lot of ways that somebody can catch these fish. Again, getting back to if it's not, you know, you're non-tournament angler, you don't have to stress yourself with forward sonar. You can still troll them. You can creek chub them. So you can troll cranks fast and cover miles and miles. You can rig bait in good areas and have success. Or like yourself, you know, you're trying to get better. You're trying to learn a new skill and technique. So you're going to go up there and you're going to test your mettle on a good bite, which, right? How important is that when you're trying to gain confidence in something a little bit new? Do it when the bite is friendly.
Yeah.
Don't try to, I mean, so that's just a whole nother element to this conversation. I guess my question is for you, why do you choose what you choose? You're talking about chubbing, talking about jigging wraps. Like, why do you choose those versus other techniques that I'm sure you're proficient at? Like, why are those your favorite in the fall?
You know, I enjoy pulling chubs. I really do. And, you know, the bigger the chub, sometimes I think the bigger the fish we're going to catch. And I'm just always trying to, you know, catch some bigger fish, you know, just trying to target big fish. And then, you know, it's nice to catch your eaters too, but I'm just trying to target big fish. That's what I enjoy doing. So, that's how I've caught most of my big fish is that way.
Yeah.
In the past. And, you know, that'll probably change here in the future, but, you know, sitting back and thinking about how we've caught most of our better fish in the fall, that's what we've done. So it's kind of in my head and that's what we like to do. And we're going to target those fish and in those areas where we know they're going to be. So it's fun for me. I enjoy it. It's kind of laid back and, you know, it's just nice going out in the afternoon and being relaxed instead of screaming hard and grinding hard for 8 hours and then getting back in. So it's more of a relaxation thing for me and try to find some big fish and enjoy the day.
What is it about a creek chub that just doesn't catch small fish typically? And same thing with a jigging wrap. Like, what is it about a jigging wrap that just seems like, it just seems like they can produce?
It's, you know, I mean, you'd be surprised. Back in the day, you know, we'd try 4 to 6 inch creek chubs, you know. In the fall, we'll go bigger than that. We'll get some of those bigger ones with that we've had in the cooler all year that we don't really use a lot of because, you know, you want at least use a decent sized chub and not use that giant.
Yeah.
And we'll throw those big ones out. And we do that in the tournaments too, you know. If we had a decent bag and we're trying to upgrade to get another big one up here, you'll throw a big chub out. So, but it seems like, you know, that bigger the chub, I mean, you'll catch that bigger fish. And when we're dragging, you know, we weren't using forward facing sonar. So the bites that we're getting, I couldn't tell till this year how big that fish was that we're going to catch with the 2D. But, you know, when we're up on top of shell now, we'll just be, I'll have that thing out 120 feet out and I'll be looking at fish and I'll just drag right over the top of those fish. You know, it gives you an opportunity to see how big they were. But back in the day, it was on 2D. And if we didn't go across it just right, it didn't look that big and it ended up being a bigger fish too, you know. So there's different things going on there. But if I'm going to focus on big fish, and that's how I did focus on big fish is that way. Big chubs, jigging wraps, number nines, and working, you know, through those fish and watching them come up and down on off those breaks. So, but now, I mean, we've all learned that not all those fish are just laying on the bottom. I mean, everybody's learned, well, some of these big fish are suspended down 30 feet or 20 feet. And you're like, oh, is that a walleye? We don't know. Well, you cast down there. Yep. It's a walleye. Wow. Okay. Now I guess there's more of a suspended bite than we thought. And we would troll or drag right over those fish in the past, not knowing that they were up that high suspended, you know? So it's forward facing sonar's made a big change. I was talking to George Little and we were talking about what was the last piece of fishing equipment that made an impact like forward facing sonar. And it was probably GPS.
Yeah.
It's here to stay and we just got to learn how to use it and we're going to target some big fish and make our catches better.
How do you rig your chubs? And I'm almost like, I mean, I want to know how you rig them now. like, or just what your, you know, preferences are in that way. But I'm also kind of curious in, like, if there's been an evolution in your, if there's been an evolution in your career with how you rig big minnows, like what, how you used to do it, what the equipment was like back then, or if you've, you know, like all the way up into, like, if you have a preference on rod and reel and line and all that stuff.
Yeah, but we use, you can use longer rods. We'll use 8-foot rods with soft tips on them. And, you know, it depends. Like, sometimes we'll use a heavy egg sinker. Depends. Heavy egg sinker with a shorter snell, or we'll use a lighter egg sinker with a longer snell, drag them, use bait feeder reels. So, you know, you can see when that fish is biting. If you can, if it takes a little drag off that bait feeder, open it and let them feed. Some of the guys are using bottom bouncers. I mean, they're pulling bottom bouncers and those fish were just crushing it. Your rod's bent over. You didn't have to feed half the time too. It's just, it all depends on what mood they're in, you know? When it's rough out, you know, you get that heavy sinker there, and if it's below the boat's bouncing so much. So you're ripping that chub up and down. So you put a lighter weight on, drag it further back. And, you know, it's just, it's all, preference. And you hook them, you know, using a 1-0 bigger hooks and right through the top lip. Don't pinch it. Don't go through the bottom and top lip. Just go through the top lip so that minnow can swim around freely and breathe and they don't die right away. So, and you'll go through small fish. Some of those big chubs too, you go through the small fish and they'll take the bellies out of those chubs. So you got to keep an eye on what's going on, changing bait frequently. So, but yeah, that's about the basic way we do it, you know?
So you don't get too fired up with, So you don't get too fired up with, like your preference on like hooks and brands and style or your leader line material size and length or your main line. You don't have any particular preferences with that?
You know, like when we were up there pre-fishing, we were catching some good fish. We were just using the half-ounce egg sinkers and a 6-foot snell with a 1-0 hook. You know, you want that wide gap hook so that, you know, when that fish takes that, you got a better opportunity to get a better hook set into them. So you're using that bigger minnow, use a bigger hook. And those fish were just taking it. It was crazy. You didn't have to feed and have during pre-fish at all. You look over, your rod's bent down. They were just crushing it. So, no, and then they do get finicky where you do have to feed line and do your countdown and whatever. You miss a couple, you come back and they're skinned back from their top fin, where they peeled the skin back. And, you know, some of those could have been small fish too, but just pay attention to what's going on and what the weather conditions are like, if it's windy, if it's not, if how the fish are biting that day. And it's just a learning experience from doing it over time.
Yeah. So, well, that's the key, right? And it's like, you can't replace time on the water with almost anything else. I mean, we're changing that a little bit now with some of the media consumption now. Like, some of this stuff is educational enough that anglers that are starting from scratch are learning a little bit faster just because the information is there. But
yep.
But really, at the end of the day, it's the time on the water is like, well, that's the most fun, anyways.
So yeah, exactly.
Like, that's what a guy's got to promote. It's like, I feel like I got to do a series of podcasts on just entrepreneurship and like how to make money at some other type of job so that you can get time off and go fishing more. That's like a, you know, it's like, I should be promoting something like that more so. But, but no, man, I think that stuff's all interesting. You know, everybody kind of, I don't know, some people get pretty ramped up over their setup, and are so specific on hooks or whatever. And a lot of that stuff maybe gets a little overblown at the end of the day. You know, a wide gap 1-0 hook, you know, like you're talking, is really, you know, if you're searching for some, you know, a better result, or you're trying to change something up, leader length and your weight size are just a couple of things that you can play with in that setup.
Absolutely.
And minnow size, I guess, but
yeah. And sometimes, like when we're running those, you know, 8 and 8 inch and longer chubs, you know, you can take a treble hook and tie a stinger off that, your 1-0 hook, so you got a little stinger on the back, so that helps you, ups your odds of catching that bigger fish, you know, and they're not just they're taking a bite of that big minnow and not getting all the way to the hook. So just one more hook to help you be more successful on catching that big fish. You know, it snags more. They snag more. You run that secondary hook and, you know, you get some snags in there and stuff like that. So depends on the areas you're fishing. So
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, it's not as clean, but it's there. And
Yeah. Especially if you're pulling bait for those suspended fish. Like I've pulled a lot of big minnows back in where I grew up in Minnesota. You pull a lot of big minnows suspended for pike. You know, like that's something we've done intentionally where I'm very familiar with, you know, fishing a big sucker or a big chub 20 feet down over 60 feet of water or whatever in a basin for a summertime bite where big pike are out chasing pelagic bait. You know, I mean, you know, that's not too far off of what we're talking about here, right? And we talk about mm-hmm. that, these summer and fall bites where they're out chasing smelt, you know, for in Sakakawea, but on the, you know, like on Oahe or Fort Peck, you know, Tulibee, Cisco, forage, where if you're just running a real big minnow in a good area and you're running it down suspended, you don't have to worry about snags or whatever. I feel like those are great opportunities when you're targeting bigger fish, you're using bigger bait, you can get creative like that. I feel like those are fun things. Those are fun conversations to have and fun little experimentations, but that could definitely help you with, even if it's like one fish catch in a season, it could literally be like a awesome fish catch. I mean, talking about targeting bigger fish.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, man. Now, what else? What else is good about fall fishing? If we could do anything with this conversation, it's just getting people fired up. Like early in this conversation, when you talk about it being it's just an angler's paradise, you know, on Sakakawea, that middle stretch of Sakakawea, and there's a fall bite all over the lake, but that middle stretch of Sakakawea where a lot of big fish are patterned up, and a lot of this great, you know, fishing from here on out is going to be happening until ice up or until you legitimately can't get a boat in the water. I mean, some of these areas, it's like, it's so gorgeous out there. It's such a fun chunk of lake to be fishing. And you're seeing deer, up on the horizon, up in the hills, you're listening to pheasants crow. The honkers are, you know, going out to feed. You know, the ducks are starting to, everything's starting to flock up. I mean, it's like, does it get any better? Does it really get any better? Can we, you know, when spring comes and we talk about it being the best time of year, when summer comes and we're wearing tank tops and we talk about it being the best time of year, do we really mean it? Or is fall, the fall pretty much has to be at the top of that list?
Yeah, fall fishing, it's something you don't want it to come right away, but you look forward to it because you don't want to lose your summer. And, you know, it just like you said, I mean, the leaves are turning, the grass is turning. I mean, it's you're fishing up there in the western part of the lake where you have the breaks, you have just the views are just awesome. And you're catching nice fish, a lot of eater fish, quality fish, big fish. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that, especially up in those areas up there too. So
yeah.
Accommodations are awesome. They got great hotels. They got the casino. They got good meals. I mean,
campgrounds. Pull a camper and a boat, and then the opportunities are endless. Absolutely. How about this? This could be our closing argument. This could be our closer. The Missouri River system right now, where would you say it's stacking up?
It's got to be definitely one of people's top three spots to go in the fall, for sure. I agree with that. You know, that system, it's just the area to be there and the fish that are being caught. I mean, you talk to people who, like, we travel a lot and we have conversations. Where are you from? Oh, I'm from Bismarck, North Dakota. Do you fish like Sakakawea a lot? Oh, we love it. We got to get up there. We want to get up there. And it's, and everywhere we travel, anybody who's a fisherman knows Lake Sakakawea, mm-hmm. and it's on their list to get to it. And, you know, we're fortunate enough to live here. So we get to do it every time we want to go fishing. We can head to the lake any weekend we want. And it's a paradise for us that we probably take for granted, but you talk to people from around surrounding states and areas, they want to come here. They look forward to it. They hear about how many fish they catch, size of fish they catch here, and the places they can go for camping and lodging and everything. It's like you said, it's a paradise up here for us, and we live it, and these people want to come.
Well, Sheldon, I appreciate the conversation, the time. I'm glad we're able to do this again. It got a little bit too long between conversations on the air, I should say. I try to be at least hit you up every once in a while just so that you know I'm thinking about you.
Absolutely.
But that being said, we let it go a little bit too long between this one, and I just love talking about this. Is like one of our favorite things to talk about is how good things are going on around here right now. And what an awesome time of year to just be having this conversation. So I appreciate it, man. I appreciate the time. And that's really it. If anybody, like I end all of these things, man, if anybody has, you know, questions about anything that you got going on, like, you know, fishing the Casino Cup circuit or fishing questions on Sakakawea, anything that we talked about, or they just want to maybe follow along and look at your pictures of big 13 pounders. How can people find you? Where can they find you? Promote whatever you want to promote.
Yeah, no, I'm just, I basically all I have is my Facebook page. Sheldon Meininger on Facebook. Just pretty simple for me. And share some photos and stuff like that and reach me through Messenger or whatever they'd like to do, and be more than happy to help out.
There it is, man.